Ladies and gents, welcome to another episode of Masters of Marketing. In this episode, I have with me Marisha Lakhiani. She's the Chief Growth Officer of Mind Valley. She overlooks $120 million a year business. Marisha has tons of experience in marketing. We discussed performance marketing, brand marketing, PR, influencer marketing. She has tons of experience that she shares. Gave a lot of examples of top brands. I loved having a discussion with her. Tune in and enjoy the episode. Marisha, welcome to Masters of Marketing.
So happy to be here.
Yeah, are you really?
I am. It's been a long time coming. We've been communicating about this for how long now? Like 3 weeks?
Yeah, probably more. So, who are you? Who is Marisha, and what do you do for a living?
So I'm the Chief Growth Officer at Mindvalley. I'm responsible for growing Mindvalley. So when I joined Mindvalley, we were doing about $30 million in revenue, and now we're doing $150 million in subscription revenue. My job there is basically managing all the marketing functions. I do like product launches, subscriptions, localization, performance marketing. I manage all the organic channels, social media, SEO. And during my time here, I've pivoted Mindvalley to a subscription business model. So in the past, when I joined, it was transactional. Now it's a subscription business model. And my vision is to pivot it into a product-led organization. Right now, it's a marketing-led organization. So a lot of cool things, which is why I've been here quite a while. I've been here 6 years already. And then outside Mindvalley, so I think part of what I love to do so much is I just love building and creating. And Mindvalley gives me that opportunity to do it. And so I try to do this outside as well. So I speak, advise, and I think my passion is just growing businesses, building, creating, coming up with new ideas, new ways of solving problems.
Good stuff. And you got listed in some renowned publications. You spoke at some of the world's most known marketing events, and you are a known figure in the marketing space. What does it take for a marketer to get to where you are?
So definitely number one is growth. I think as a marketer, you have to always be on top of things. You have to always be learning. So attending these conferences, whether it's reading books, attending conferences, listening to podcasts, you have to always be on top of your game. I think something that's also really important, number two, would be your circle. I think it's really important to have a community of marketers that you're close to, that you can jam with, you can come up with new ideas with, you can share knowledge, exchange with. That's super important. I think people underestimate the value of that. Passion. So number three would be passion. If you're not passionate about marketing, like the way I am, the way you are, it will feel like a job and will feel very daunting. But I think for me and you, like even having that conversation with you in Dubai, you're so passionate about it that it doesn't feel like work. So you don't mind spending hours trying to solve a problem. You don't mind putting in the hours in the meetings and trying to create and come up with new ways of doing things because it's actually fun and you thrive from it, right? And I think the last thing that's super important is the humility and the willingness to fail, because marketing is so humbling. Sometimes you think you got it right, but you actually got it so wrong, and the numbers tell. And sometimes when you think you might be failing, you might actually be onto something and be able to run a test or come up with an idea that kind of like crushes everything. So I think being good at marketing means that you cannot play it safe, and that means you have to be very, very comfortable failing and getting it wrong most of the time. And I also use my marketing skills to kind of market myself. So I do a lot of like speaking gigs, like you mentioned. I have a newsletter. I'm trying to create content on Instagram. So I'm recording myself now. So trying to apply everything that I've learned into building my own brand as a marketer.
Awesome. So what type of content are you creating now for yourself?
So at the moment, the newsletters are like marketing teardowns. So I basically take brands that I look up to and strategies that they use, and I tear down what works, what doesn't, how it worked, why it worked. And then I make these reels on Instagram, which are basically, again, it's educating people on marketing. So it's like little tips and tricks on what you can try or do to kind of scale your brand.
Okay. And yeah, I'll tag you on Instagram, but what's your handle?
Marisha Lakhiani.
Okay, just your name, basically.
That's my name.
Okay, good, easy. Is influencer marketing important for e-commerce, you think?
I actually think influencer marketing can be a game changer for e-commerce because, so with influencer marketing, you're able to get one of the best forms of marketing, which is word of mouth marketing, right? So it's very different when you're telling someone that your brand is amazing and your product is amazing. And it's very different when they see other people talk about why your product is amazing. So it already builds that trust and authority. And I think it can be really, really valuable for any brand to have. It also enables you to reach a much wider audience, right? Because you're literally reaching a community that you don't have access to. This is like the influencer community, you know, like the followers of all these influencers. So I think it can be really game changing. I think that a lot of times businesses don't want to do it because it does take a lot of investment. You have to put time behind it and you have to give it some time to work. It's like a little bit like SEO. It doesn't happen on autopilot. And sometimes you might try, you might dabble, you might not see results right away and you pull back. But you just need to be a little more consistent with it and give it some time because you need a bunch of influencers to be activated for it to truly work. And it's proven. So, for example, if you look at brands like Gymshark, Gymshark scaled to 5 million followers because of their influencer strategy. And there's so many brands like this that use influencer strategies. For example, Glossier uses influencer strategy. Fashion Nova is one of the fastest growing, one of the most mentioned fashion brands on the internet, and that brand is literally built with influencer marketing. So there's a lot of brands that have capitalized on it. And I think that the reason why they made it work is because they went all in on it. So they didn't just dabble, test it out, you know, put a couple of thousand dollars and said, you know, does this work for me? But they actually went all in to make it work.
So working with macro influencers as well and investing big on influencers.
Yeah, just giving it a bit of time and being committed to that as a strategy. And then having a holistic strategy, right? Because you might not, it's not just about activating the influencers. It's like, how do you activate the communities of these influencers? How do you, when they follow you, how do you continue to nurture them? So you also want to be running contests, you know, maybe having some sort of an event, having some sort of a challenge. So that way you're still engaging with them and you're kind of keeping that momentum going. And it's not just like a campaign that you run and then you stop. So I think there's a unique robust strategy around it, but when you do, it can be insanely successful for your brand.
Right. Even for like luxury products, like I wonder, for example, a brand that wants to be positioned somewhere where, let's say, Chanel is,
Yes.
but that could be a, let's say, a flower shop, right? A flower shop that is selling premium flowers. And the content, their social media content strategy is posting about the products
Right.
and not necessarily engaging with competitions or with
Right.
like user-generated campaigns, right?
Right.
How would you achieve that after you engage with the influencers? Because So let me just add on this. So let's say that brand, a luxury flower shop, engages with influencers because it makes sense.
Right.
And then these followers will start following this brand. How
Yeah.
would you engage with these followers on the brand's pages?
So, firstly, I'll be very mindful of what kind of influencers I work with because you have to find someone, an influencer that really, really resonates with that brand, that kind of speaks your language, aligns to the values. As soon as you find it, if you work with an influencer that doesn't, it's the conversions are not going to be high because that audience is not going to really resonate with your brand either. But once you find the right influencer, you activate that audience, they follow you, then you can still do like VIP events. You can do like special giveaways in a sense where like there's a lot of like luxury brands like you know Coach and Michael Kors and stuff like that. They do like VIP events where they do like special releases or collab releases or things that are more in more scarce. So they're like limited edition pieces and things like that. So yeah, so they you can do these like limited edition collabs or you know exclusive pieces or like limited time pieces and things like that, or even like have an access code for just your followers and say you can access this page of like limited edition pieces for a limited time period. So you just need to be a bit more creative with it. But ideally it's to show your followers that by following you, they're getting a peek into a whole new world. So that's the whole concept about it, right? So even if you're a mass market brand, you want to do these challenges because you're trying to build that connection with your audience. So if you just make that a little more premium, make that experience a little more premium, make it a little more scarce, you know, like give them like high-end benefits, sneak peeks behind the scenes, limited edition collabs. I think it could work really well. You can even do like a little series. You can use education to do a little series for your followers. I think all of these things will work. It doesn't matter if you're luxury or not luxury. There's even
Okay.
a huge trend now of live commerce where people are shopping online. So even like walking them through the process of making these bouquets and, you know, they might want to book some in advance for Valentine's Day or, you know, things like that. Like try to be a little more creative because I think essentially what all followers want is to feel like they can connect with that brand on a much deeper level.
Makes sense. Yeah. How important is brand marketing for e-commerce?
So I think brand marketing is very important, but a lot of people underestimate it, especially when you're starting out. When you're starting out, all you think about is performance. So I think brand kind of takes a back seat, but it's so important to give you this like unique position for your product, and it differentiates your product from the competitor's product. So I'll give you an example, right? So there's this brand called Last Crumb, and Last Crumb sells cookies, but it sells cookies at $140. And that is because they have really tight branding. So that's the power of branding. It allows you to stand out from what everyone else is doing and allows you to have a completely differentiated strategy and charge a premium price. But it really comes down to like, what is your brand strategy? So are you focused mainly on performance, and are you like a lower price point product and you just want to scale? Or are you thinking about being more premium? Because then you need a differentiated strategy and you're going to need a brand strategy. And branding works so well because if you think about even brands like Chanel, why is Chanel the fastest growing asset class? It even beats like some stocks. And it's because of the years and years and years of branding. So it's something that I think is so powerful that is a lot of times underutilized, but when done well, it can be huge for your brand.
Right. How do you do it at Mind Valley? Like, how
So
do you split
actually,
budgets between brand and performance, let's say?
so in Mindvalley, it's really strange because brand has been something that we've only started applying recently because we were all about conversions before. And then we got a whole like a branding agency to come in and kind of redo our whole brand. So we tried to build this brand consistency because what we found is that we produce a lot of good content and we're putting this stuff out, but not many people have that brand recall. So we knew branding was so important, even in our ad campaigns, to boost our ROAS. So what we do right now is we do brand campaigns, and then we focus on also boosting social media posts because what that does is that also creates that brand recall. So branding doesn't just necessarily mean like one brand video. It means like having that brand consistency, so someone, and having that brand positioning, so someone knows like, okay, that is a Mindvalley brand. That's Mindvalley ad. Like I recognize this. This brand stands for these values, you know, and they can recall it, right? So, and we've done a lot of these brand lift studies as well, just to make sure like what we're doing is on the right track. But it's something that we've just started doing fairly recently and we weren't doing before.
Okay. I had a discussion with Ross, the CEO of Agoda, and it's a podcast there on the channel, and he says that they split their budget between direct, so performance, and the brand about 50-50. Imagine. And sometimes they go 60 brand, 40 performance.
Wow, we're not there yet. We're
Yeah.
getting there. I 100% believe that's where we need to go. But also, our brand is evolving so fast. Like for example, right this year alone, we launched like three new line items. So now our brand is slightly different from what it was, and you know, now it's like in some way a pyramid where people graduate and they start buying these other products, and it just needs to be communicated with the whole brand, right? So I feel like we need to get there, and I would. Like I'm now like 20-80, but I would 100% want to get to like 50-50.
Where do you spend your money on?
Performance mainly. Performance is like the 80 on like Meta
Yeah,
and
like,
Google.
okay, Meta and Google.
Meta and Google. Yeah.
Yeah. Are you putting some budgets on TikTok or not?
I tried TikTok. It hasn't necessarily worked for me very well. I feel like I have way more better performance on Meta and Google. But I do wanna, I think I just had the, I worked at an agency. I just think I had the wrong agency and the wrong strategy, and I need to go back to the drawing board. So it's something I'm gonna pick up in 2024.
Your TikTok strategy is different than other, your TikTok content is different than Meta content.
The
Yeah,
content is
okay.
different, the entire strategy is different. The offers are different. So it's like a completely different strategy. When I was working with the agency, we decided that to give them like creative freedom to figure out like how to tap into this and what is going to work, what is not going to work. We tried a couple of things, it didn't work, and now I wanna dial back in and because we have, again, I told you we have new offers, so I feel like now I have a grasp of what I think the strategy should be, and I want to kind of dial that in. And we were trying because I was like, for me, it was a learning curve because I told you marketers need to learn. So me, it's a learning curve. So the agency, it was really interesting because the agency had their version of what they think would convert, and I had my vision of what I think would convert. But I also wanted to, I didn't want to hire someone and tell them like, let me tell you how to do your job. So I wanted to give them that creative freedom, but it wasn't really working.
Okay.
Expensive lesson.
Yeah, you know what I've realized over the years working with so many different brands, for let's say TikTok to work, for ads on TikTok to work, the brands should be living on TikTok. So
Yes.
yeah, so I ran some tests for brands that I just started recently living on TikTok. They don't have a lot of engagement, they don't have a lot of followers, they don't have the right impressions, etc. Ran campaigns, ran ads, ROAS is close to zero. Versus brands that live on TikTok, the ROAS is very high, right? Same with, right? Like we work with one of the biggest e-coms. That brand lives on Instagram, doesn't live on Facebook. So the posts go on Facebook automatically, but the content is boosted on Instagram. And the followers are on Instagram, the engagement is on Instagram. On Facebook, there's like one like, two likes, because nobody sees the content. You run an ad on it on Instagram, it performs so well. You run it on Facebook, it doesn't perform because nobody knows it on Facebook, right? Everybody knows it on Instagram. So it's yeah, it's it makes sense. Okay? Yeah.
And
What
our
do you want to
brand
say?
is Instagram first. So our content strategy, everything is Instagram first, which is why that's probably the case. We adopted TikTok a bit late.
Yeah, like all of us, like all brands. TikTok is late. I see, for example, one big brand that I love on TikTok is Emirates Airlines. I don't know if you see them, if you see what they do. I actually posted a video, I think, yesterday or today. Like, if you see the content versus the Instagram content, is like completely the opposite. You feel like it's a completely different brand, and they're huge on TikTok. They're really big, big, big on TikTok.
That's where I
So
need to
yeah.
get. Yes, I'm also thinking about like what do I need on TikTok? I feel like I need like a correspondent on TikTok, like a face on TikTok that can also create content on it. And it should be very, the strategy should be very different from our Reels like a real strategy, right? And I'm trying to hire a couple of agencies to work on it. So they started building things. We tested different types of content, formats. Like how much should they be edited? How should they be cut? What kind of authors work? So we tried a bunch of things. I think there was a lot of learnings in 2023, but I don't think we really like cracked the code for our brand on TikTok. And also our audience, to be honest, is a lot older. So our audience sits on Instagram and Facebook. They don't necessarily sit on TikTok, which is why it hasn't been like a core focus of ours. But I definitely want to try to crack it and figure it out because I do think that if we want to be relevant in the long term, we do need to target that younger audience and bring them in.
Yeah. Do you boost your TikTok videos or not?
No, at the moment, no.
Okay.
Moment, no. So
Okay.
we just post the videos and we see if they go viral. Like we had a video just the other day that went viral, got like 4 million, 5 million views.
Wow.
So
Amazing.
yes, we're learning, So not every video has gotten that. Like
Yeah.
some videos gotten like 10,000 views, and then there's like the occasional like few million views.
Yeah, good stuff. Nice. 4 million is good.
I was so proud. I was like, oh my God, we made it.
Yeah, good stuff. How important is PR, do you think, for e-commerce?
So I think PR is also very important. I think all of this is important, right? But I think that they come in different stages. You don't start a brand and just go all in and activate all the channels. But at different stages, you're going to need to activate different channels, right? So I think PR is really important. I think it can be really powerful for a much larger, more sizable brand. I think it, when you're early on, probably not so necessary, but as you get a bit bigger, I think it can be really powerful. Now, I think what brands get wrong is how they look at PR. And I'm saying this because I made the same mistake, right? So when they look at PR, they're just thinking about being featured and getting articles and getting press, right? Essentially, they're like, okay, I just want to get featured. I want to be on Forbes. I want to be here. I want to be there. But I realized that that is an old way of looking at PR. The new way of looking at PR is purely for connections. So if you are crafting, and you need to craft the PR strategy, not your PR agency. Like, they will just do the absolute bare minimum to get you featured on these articles. But if you craft your own PR strategy and you say, okay, this is my wish list. This is what I want. I want to be featured here. I want a Netflix show. I want to be connected to these people. I want to work with these influencers. I want to spin off and have a side brand that's called this. And I have a podcast, and I want to interview these 10 people. The PR agency can make that happen because PR agencies have like the best connections. So ideally, what you're doing is that as a brand, you might not have these connections and you might not be in the space or in the know. But hiring an agency basically gives you and allows you to tap into these hundreds of connections that they have, that they've built over the years and nurtured over the years. So it can be so powerful for you if you just know how to use it and you craft a strategy with them and you align the strategy to your own business goals, right? So in your case, let's say you have a podcast, hire a PR agency, they'll get you the best of the best guests on your podcast. They can even get you advertisers, sponsors for your podcast. There's so much they can do for you, not just features and different publications. So I think if you know how to use it and if you know what your strategy is and what you want to accomplish, it can be really, really cool.
Yeah, makes sense. In a different perspective, I was talking the other, like a few months ago actually, and I put a post again about it. Jewelry designer, she produces. She's Lebanese. She produces luxury, like not luxury, premium jewelry. So they go
Right.
for 10,000, 50,000, 100,000, $200,000 a piece, a ring.
Right.
Yeah. So she doesn't have
Yeah.
stuff for, few hundred dollars or, a few tens
Yeah.
of dollars. So she's like, should I build a proper e-com? Should I invest in SEO? Should I invest in, because she spoke to different agency and agencies tell her, yeah, you have to invest in SEO. You have to invest in Google ads and social media ads and stuff. And I was like, man, definitely not. You go and speak to a PR agency from day one. Forget about performance because you're not going to sell. I've done it for other brands. You're not going to sell. People, they don't know you. If they go and search for your brand name, you're nowhere to be seen. And if I want a gift to my girl, wife, mom, something that has cost $10,000 or $100,000, I'm gonna go and buy it from a known brand. Imagine I give it to my girl and she goes and searches for that person's name and she's nobody. So you gotta go and invest in a PR, get the right interviews, be seen on TV, get maybe the right influencers, get the right articles, create these VIP events that you talked about. Right, invite the right celebrities, and only PR agencies can help you with that. So you can either do it yourself, or you work with the right PR agency. So, but I
100%.
understand, like for me too, as an agency today, as a marketing agency, doing PR is way more valuable than me running Google ads and saying, yeah, I'm the best, do you land on my landing pages and I'm the best agency with award winning and these are my clients, et cetera. But if I do PR, if I am on TV, and that's something that I want to do, but I haven't done yet. But imagine I'm speaking on TV, or imagine I'm speaking on radio, or imagine I'm at an event where I'm like always speaking, like what we did together, right? Conferences. Imagine I'm always seen at conferences speaking, the thought leader, then that has way more value than me ranking organically or. So yeah, I hear you and I agree with what you said.
Yeah, I think it builds immense trust, with the brand. And I love that because, to be honest, like if that woman was looking to grow her jewelry brand, almost everyone would have told her to run ads, but it wouldn't have worked for her. I mean, she would have sold some, but then it would have been a very high cap, right? But PR would actually build that authority and trust, and then position her as like a designer, you know, like a premium designer. So I definitely think like PR would be the way to go. And she can even they can even get her to make these little influencer kits and send it out to influencers so they can talk about her jewelry. So there's like so much creative stuff that you can do with PR.
Absolutely. How to win customers at the lowest cost for an e-commerce?
So I think there's several strategies that you could use to attract customers at a lower cost. I think the first would be to make sure you have an organic strategy because like paid ads just keeps rising. It rose like 60% in the last 5 years. So it's detrimental that you have an organic strategy, whether you're utilizing social media, whether you're utilizing SEO, like whatever your strategy is, it's fine. But as long as you have some sort of organic strategy, and a lot of brands that I've spoken to that are starting out, they are so reliant on paid media that they don't have an organic strategy, which is crazy because then if something happens, like the algorithm, you know, iOS 14 or you know, cost increase, then the brand becomes unsustainable, right? So I think having an organic strategy is crucial. I also think like thinking about growth loops and referrals, like thinking about if someone comes into the ecosystem, how can I get them to bring in more people? So some brands do like a give 20, get 20. Some brands have a growth loop. So for example, Trello has a growth loop where you come in and then you create a board and then you share it with your team and now you've just invited 6 people or 10 people to join. So thinking about how you can do that. So for example, ClassPass has a guest pass. I can share guest passes with people. For e-com brands, there are so many other ways to do that. So maybe you can have like a referral in a sense where, you know, if you refer 5 friends, you're going to have a massive discount or you're going to get access to a special line of items, or you're going to get into a VIP list, or you know, you bump up in terms of the loyalty program. So there's like so many ways you can do it. But having some sort of a growth loop and referral strategy is really valuable. A/B testing, you can drop your acquisition costs just by A/B testing, adding a few trigger elements here and there. You know, how your image is, how it's positioned, adding social proof, reviews, adding badges. Maybe it's free shipping. If you offer free shipping, that's super important. That can drive your conversion rates like 20, 30%. Adding guarantees. So if there is a some sort of a guarantee that you offer, I spoke to one e-com brand that was offering a lifetime guarantee. So mentioning how long it takes to receive your product. So maybe your product you get it in like 2, 3 days. That's a benefit. So mentioning those, like all of these things, if you make sure you've checked the list and added all of these things to your page, you can drop your CAC. And last but not least, I think this is a really good strategy, partnerships and affiliates. A lot of people don't use it, but actually accessing affiliate networks or building partnerships with other brands that are going after the same audience as yours, you can drop your CAC by like less than one third. Because you're basically what you're doing is you're collab, for example, the jewelry brand. Now she can partner with someone that has a fashion line and they can collab on jewel on like looks, right? So she can either stock it in the store where she doesn't have any cost and she can just stock it there. And then she can pay a commission for every time the jewelry is being sold. Or she can do like lookbooks together. She can do lookbooks that they send to the audience of the fashion brand. So there's so many things that you can do in terms of partnering because we're all attracting or trying to acquire the same audience. So if you can just partner with a brand that's already trying to acquire that audience, you can cut your cost in like half or even less. So partnerships is a strong way to do it. I think a lot of brands neglect it. They're just thinking like acquisition, like social media, ads, SEO.
Yeah.
They forget all of these other ways to do it.
That's true. Can you talk about more on can you talk about can you talk more about the organic strategy? So what is organic strategy for an e-commerce?
So organic strategy could be like using your social media, like really utilizing like viral videos. So for example, there's so many brands that have scaled just by you creating amazing content. So whether it's content on YouTube, whether it's content on Reels, TikTok, but just creating amazing content, putting content out there, articles out there, you know, mentioning your product in articles, doing comparisons of your products, you know, this versus that. There's so many ways to do it. And I'll give you some examples, okay? So for example, there's this nipple cover brand, which is very random. There's nipple cover brand, and they went viral because what they did was instead of showing you traditionally how a nipple cover works, they started sticking it on all these random places. So they're like, okay, you can plug it on this tap and it will stop water from coming out. You can
It.
have a hole on this wall and plug it on this wall. So it's so random. And each of their videos, what you thought, the videos were getting 2 million views.
What is it called?
I can't remember the name. I have to send it to you after. But I remember
Yeah,
seeing
send
this
it to
and
the
just
other, please.
like, how are they doing this? And this, they were doing so, they were even showing like, okay, so this guy has like narrow shoulders, put it in your shirt, and basically it gives you broader shoulders. So like just have like the most random use cases for it. And that's so creative. But they're probably only doing organic. I don't think they're doing any ads because they were getting millions of views for their videos. And they are so simple, not edited, no captions, raw, just like absolutely raw. Poor quality, like absolutely raw. So that's a really good example. Another good example is Zapier. So what Zapier did is when they scaled, what they did is their strategy was SEO. So they wrote API, like, this integration blogs about how you can integrate Zapier with this tool. So now when anyone is searching, that's how they did, people discover Zapier,
Of
right? They're searching,
course.
how do I integrate MailChimp with, or integrate Airtable with? And then they found these articles, how-to articles, and it all led them to Zapier. So they're
And they have
finding ways.
amazing blogs, like, and they have like tons of videos. But what did they start this in the beginning? Because now Zapier is big, and they have the funds, and they have the money, they have the resources. So all like, and all the bloggers talk about them, right? So there's like tons of YouTube videos about them. So that's how they started.
That's how they started. They started SEO first. And then now they're doing all these influencers and all these things, but actually their core strategy is SEO. And what they do is that for every article, they actually get the tool to write the article. So example, if they're working with MailChimp and they do an integration with MailChimp, MailChimp writes the article for Zapier. So they don't even have to put in their own resources to get to getting these guides or articles out.
So you said the organic strategy for you on e-commerce is just, let's say, social media. So you, whether you create viral videos, or sometimes you cannot create viral videos as a brand because you can't for different reasons. But social media, organic, SEO, search, organic search, I would say. And what else other than these two?
It's going to be specific to your product. So it depends where your product is and where your audience is sitting. You can literally just go where your audience is at, and kind of craft that strategy with them. So, or you can also, again, like collabs, partnerships. There's so many different things to do to kind of build your brand organically. You can use a whole bunch of guerrilla marketing tactics, like be creative, I think content is probably the easiest one to scale because right now we're in this world where people are just constantly on their phones. They spend like 152 minutes on their phone a day, like on social media. So it's the best way to connect with a brand. And also with social media, like if you are able to learn how to make good content, you can just like tap into a whole new audience. Videos can go viral. There's like videos that some brands have made, super organic, super chilled. Like the ones where it looks like someone is stealing this woman's bag, and then they run after, she runs after the guys, but actually it's, so if you can just get creative with that, you can literally get millions of views on your content. So it's just about spending more time and be more intentional with what your strategy is. Versus like SEO is a long-term game, it takes more time.
I know that you invest, or Mindvalley invest heavily in SEO or organic search. How much do you invest in SEO? In terms of how do you split your budget between paid and organic?
I think it's Mindvalley's primarily driven by paid. And SEO is actually a small subset of the budget, only because it just takes a long time, and it's we're creating these articles, and then I don't know. So I invest in it, and I have a whole new SEO strategy for 2024, which I want to change it up a little bit. So what I'm doing with my strategy right now is I'm not just keeping the articles up, but I'm actually pivoting it to make it a newsletter. So part of the articles is going to be like to sign up for a product, which is the newsletter, which gives you like the is to make it like the best personal development newsletter out there. So kind of like the Morning Brew strategy. So I don't want it to just be the articles. And the reason for that is that in the past, we were our SEO game was very strong because we had an offer at the end of every article. The offer was the free classes, and it worked really well. But we stopped doing the free classes. And because of that, now we haven't found the right offer at the end of these articles. So what is the next step that someone's supposed to take? So I think the next step is going to be these newsletters where I can give them a lot of value, give them like a free meditation. I can give them like, you know, a topic, like if you want to optimize your sleep, here's like 3 ways you can optimize your sleep. Here's a lesson. Here's a strategy. Maybe here's a meditation, you know, here's an expert you should follow. So that's kind of where I'm going with it, but it's something that we're working on building at the moment.
Got you.
Yeah.
Cool. So your cost per acquisition is only increasing now that cost per click is increasing over the years.
My cost
because the brand name is more known and
yeah,
my cost per acquisition, not the CAC, right?
Yeah.
So your CAC is probably logically it should drop because more and more people know of your brand. So there's a lot of direct, right? And referrals, whatever it is. But the cost per acquisition, now that we see even Meta cost per acquisition or cost per click is increasing, how is that affecting your cost per acquisition?
So actually I've been measuring it over the last couple of years, and it's been decreasing for me. I also think we changed our advertising model. We've gotten more creative with our videos. We've been testing a lot on the pages and on the funnel. So as we're doing these tests, we're able to optimize and convert better. So I don't see that it's increasing. I actually see that we have seasons. So I see like some periods where it's lower, some periods where it's higher. And we just try to ride the wave when we can. So when it's lower, we try to acquire more vigorously. And then when it's higher, we kind of scale back down a little bit. But I see it's more based on seasons. And I found like this year, actually, like I felt like a lot of advertisers pulled out. I was expecting costs to rise more significantly, especially during November, Black Friday. That's been like seasonal for us. But this year, I felt like there was a drop compared to the last few years.
Makes sense. And you're right, like your cost per acquisition might, even though the cost per click is increasing, your cost per acquisition might even go lower because you're building brand, right? You're more known, you have more reviews, better landing pages, right? Better user experience, right? More trust, so people would convert better.
Right.
Would exactly. Convert higher, right? So
exactly.
Makes sense. How do you reduce churn rate?
How do I reduce churn rate? Okay, so I think churn, the most important part about churn to understand is that it is about keeping the promise you made to your customers. So that's like the essential part. Because I think a lot of people have to deal with high churn rates because they've like, as marketers, we love to promise things. We're like, okay, well, you know, we're going to do all of these things. We're like 10x better. And you know, we're over-promised, but when it comes to delivery, we are not able to deliver on that promise. You know, customers have a bad experience. They're trying to get their money back. Like that's when a customer decides they want to leave. So if you can just match that, make sure that whatever you promise, you deliver, that's already winning them over. Then I think it's important to add some sort of a wow element. So that means they need to be like, it's like a date. So you need to wow them at some point. They do something to show them that you appreciate that date or the time or the effort, right? So maybe it's giving them something unexpected, giving them something for free, upgrading them for free, you know, jumping on a call, checking in on them. So like all of these small things that you can do just to show them that you really care and appreciate their business and you want to take out time for them and you see them. I think that's so valuable. And this is how you create this like long-term loyal fans. It's not just selling the product and then letting them figure it out on themselves, right? Now, when it comes to reducing churn, a couple of things to care about is I'm talking about from a SaaS perspective, and we can apply it to e-com as well. It's the onboarding. That's one of the most critical things for churn. It's how there's someone, you know, join the community or buy or become a customer and you know, get their product. So for example, like for an e-com, in the case of an e-com, it's, okay, so example, they buy a product. How are you notifying them about their delivery? How are you keeping in touch with them? Like, what are you communicating after them? Like, how are you welcoming them to the community? You know, so you can send them an email with their name on it. You can use Nifty images. So you can customize and personalize that experience. You can send them regular updates and check-ins with when their product is going to be delivered. You can wow them with an extra benefit or something, a sample or something to try, or like a special VIP pass or any other thing that they weren't expecting. You can offer them as a gift for joining the community. you can do so many different things to personalize and customize that experience, right? So it's, I think the onboarding is one that people miss out on and they don't put a lot of effort on. And one brand that does it really well is this hair care brand that's called Georgia Mane. So basically, like, I bought shampoo from them, and it's just shampoo. It's e-com, pure e-com. I bought shampoo. And then in 30 days, they checked in on me to say, like, hey, how is it going? And it wasn't from an automated email. It was from a person. So it was like, hi, I'm Liz. And I want to check in on you. And how's your shampoo going? Did you see results? And were you able to use it every day? Or were you able to use it regularly? And I got the email, and I had no intention of buying again. So I was churned. I was not going to be a repeat buyer. But when I got the email, I was like, how were the results? And she's like, did I use it regularly? Technically, I was traveling a lot, so I did not use it regularly. So is it a me problem, or is it a them problem, right? So then I realized that it's a me problem. Like, now I should give them a second chance, and I should actually try the product, use it regularly, and then I'll have an answer about how the results were. Because right now, I don't know. So that encouraged me to buy again. And then they checked in on me again. They're like, hey, you know, we haven't seen you. Here's a 10-15% offer. You know, you can click here and check in. So, and then they even sent me an email about testimonials, you know, like, if you use it regularly, like, you know, X times a week, these are what other customers are, these are the results other customers are getting. So they did a really good job at creating a personalized experience where it felt like I was seen and they valued my support. It didn't feel like I was just another customer. I was getting automated emails and they didn't really care about my business. They were just caring about a sale. They really genuinely cared about me achieving the results that they promised on the sales page. So I think brands can kind of adopt that by creating this like personalized experience, connecting with customers one-on-one, even though it's like, it's actually automated and it's probably AI generated and things like that, but it felt like a one-on-one communication. And really checking in to see if the product is working for the customer and how can they make the customer succeed at the end of the day. And that's true retention.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
And good stuff. Again, I made a video the other day and I was like, about
you gotta send
churn,
me all these
right?
Videos. All these videos are on LinkedIn or are they on Instagram?
I live on Instagram. I don't live on LinkedIn.
On
so
Instagram?
Yeah. Okay. Instagram. I post on LinkedIn, but I open it once every, because LinkedIn, like, I get tons of messages, like private message. I don't like it. And I feel like I'm wearing a different hat, which is not me.
Right.
You know, LinkedIn, I go in and I feel like I have to be professional. You know what I mean? Like, I have to be whatever, like in a certain mindset, which I don't necessarily like it. I like to be me, like chilled, relaxed. That's why I like Instagram. I live on Instagram. Churn. So that video, again, you know, I've worked with a lot of e-commerce and automation. I'm big on automation. I love automation. And I say, hey, for e-commerce, one of the things to reduce churn is just pick up the phone, man. It doesn't matter if you're in e-commerce selling thousands of orders a month. Just pick up the phone. One phone call as a CEO, one phone call a day. That's it. All it takes. It could take you 5 minutes. It could take you 15 minutes. It could take you 1 minute, right? Just one phone call a day. Just imagine that feedback and the relationship you start building. So I agree with you. Personalized, right? So instead of just automated, because now we're used to automation and automation makes a lot of sense. But yeah, personalized, add value, improve the user experience.
There was this tool, I gotta remember, someone told me about this, but I never got down to trying it out. But basically, it's some sort of a CRM tool that helps you record personalized video. So this is a CEO mm-hmm. friend of And what he does is he gets people join or buy a product, and then he gets their name on like a text message. So, and then he says, okay, so this, like, you know, Stefan bought a product, that he just, within that app, he literally records like a 30-second video of like, Stephen, you just bought this product. Amazing. I can't wait to for you to try it out. I think you're going to love it. And then he sends directly to the customer. And he's like, I record like 10-second, 30-second videos. I don't spend that much time on it. But I can record like 10 a day. He's like, I don't mind. Everywhere I am, I'm lunch, I'm just like in the commute or wherever I am, I just record these videos and send it out.
Nice.
And he said, my customers love it, love it. And they share it on the Instagram, they share it with other people, talk about it. So he just gets tons of press just because he takes the effort to do that. I just don't know what that would call, but I'm sure if you guys Google, you'll find it.
Love it. Nice one. Good. How do you come up with your marketing budget for the brands or for Mind Valley? You take a percentage or projected revenues?
How do you do it? Project, Yeah, so it's mainly projected revenue. So first I start off with like defining my objectives. So in Mindvalley, we create OKR, so it's objective key results. So you craft the wider objective and you break it down to key results that you want to accomplish. And usually like defined by a metric. So what are the key metrics I want to move for the year? And then what I would do is I would look at historical patterns. So I'll look at like, okay, what is my past CAC? What is my past LTV? You know, how are my show up rates? Like I look at past data, historical data, to see where the gaps are, where the opportunities are. So then I know what do I actually want to focus on? Because ideally, I think my marketing budget is a sense, a combination of identifying what are the gaps, what are the opportunities, where do I want to focus, and where do I want to, you know, where do I want to capitalize, and then crafting that plan, right? So looking at past data, coming up with like where I want to focus on, then I kind of like do an audit with my team. So it's always like what worked, what didn't work, and then key learnings so that again we identify the opportunities and the blockers. And then I map out product by product, channel by channel, what is going to be their strategy. So SEO, what's going to be the strategy? How can we innovate? How can we, without spending more, like optimize the key numbers, you know? So maybe get more sessions. Are we focusing on getting more clicks? Are we focusing on getting more sessions? Like, you know, where is the focus going to lie for the year? And then I start creating a forecast. So based on all of the stuff that we're doing, what can we forecast? So for every line item, every product, okay, how much revenue can we forecast, knowing that this is the strategy moving forward? So every line item we forecast like month on month till the end of the year. And then I do a little sweep of the strategy. So for example, I look at the strategies and I'll say, okay, maybe this strategy is nice to have, but it's also super costly and the ROI might not be the best. So I prioritize the strategies that are going to have the biggest impact and I stick to that. And then I refine the budget and then to close it all. I just make sure that there's a healthy marketing efficiency ratio. So that means my total sales, so my total bookings, after dividing my total bookings by my cost of marketing, I have over a 300% ratio. So it's like 3x is kind of like a healthy ratio. So if you're generating more than 3 times of bookings from your marketing costs, then you're pretty much a healthy company, right? So trying to make sure that I'm in that ratio, and then that's my plan. So it's always about like, okay, like what do I want to focus on? Where are the gaps? Maybe the gap is really lead generation. Maybe the gap is really like show up rate. Maybe it's getting more sessions on the page. Maybe it's really focusing on viral content. It's you know, getting more eyeballs on my content reach. So where's the gaps really? What do I want to focus on? What is the strategy for those gaps? What is the marketing plan or the campaign plan to promote all of the products? Mapping it out for the year, budgeting and forecasting all of that, and then making sure that the cost fall into a healthy ratio.
What did you mean by the 3x return?
So there's this KPI called marketing efficiency ratio. It's basically the health of your marketing efforts, right? So the way to calculate it is you look at your total revenue generated. So in our case, bookings, like your total bookings that you've gotten for the year, you divide it by the cost of marketing. And then you see like what is the efficiency ratio. So ideally, if every dollar you spend, you should be able to generate $3 back, right? If you're spending a dollar and you're generating $2 back, then there's room to optimize. That means you got to think about where can I allocate my budget better so I can generate a higher ROI, because you also have other costs. You have costs of running your organization, people, all of those other things. So marketing cannot be more than 30% of your total cost. That's or for established company, that's already a lot. So that's already a lot. So you want to make sure that it's kind of under that, and then if you have a ratio of like three, it's pretty, it's that, that then you're kind of like in a safe zone. So it's always making sure that you're within that range.
So that's how you do it. So you have the projected revenue now, let's say for 2024, and you say, my marketing budget is whatever, like 30% in your case,
Yeah.
25%. And how much, how many, how do, what is a healthy one? What is a healthy budget percentage for a business, for a SaaS or for an e-commerce, you'd say?
I think when you're starting out, it's hard because you're definitely going to be spending more, and you're going to be spending more in marketing because you're literally going to be like literally buying customers when you're first starting out, right? That's if you're not using any guerrilla tactics, you're not using PR, and you're just focusing mainly on media buying. But ideally, you should have like your marketing budget should be like 30 to 33% or even under. It should not be more than that because it should be like one third of your total revenue generated. So that, and that's like in a growth stage. So that's if you're in a growth stage, you obviously want to spend a lot on acquiring, you want to build, and a subscription is even better because your subscription, whatever I'm spending now, I'm not just making back the money this month or this year. I'm actually going to make it back next year as well. So
Which is the case for Mind Valley.
yeah, so we're subscription as well. So that's why it's okay to spend this year as well to acquire customers because we know that these guys are going to retain. So if they are monthly users, they're going to be paying every month. If they're yearly users, they're going to retain in the years to come. And then also members buy other things, right? So you have a customer, your customer's not buying one thing, your customer has a lifetime value. So they're going to buy other things with you. So if, for the case of the jewelry brand, they're not just going to buy one necklace for Valentine's Day. They're going to buy one necklace for Valentine's Day, one necklace for the birthday, one necklace for Christmas. You know, so they keep coming back if they really enjoy your service and your products and your offerings.
So that 3 times is ROAS, right? Not the so this is pure ROAS, not calculating the lifetime value, right?
This is not ROAS. This is just like it's an ROI. It's not necessarily ROAS. It encapsulates ROAS. It's all your marketing costs and all your marketing revenue. But it also encapsulates ROAS. Now, this is not, I don't look at lifetime value, but I will decide what my willingness to pay for a customer is based on my lifetime value. So I will optimize accordingly, but this doesn't encapsulate lifetime value.
Right. Yeah, because 30%, it could be very, very high, or it could be impossible for businesses, right? So, like in your case, when you said like growth period, not necessarily looking at net revenue, you care about growth, then 30%, yeah, could make sense. But like for an e-com, for an e-commerce business like the ones that I'm involved in, no way. Like,
Yeah,
no way.
no. Yeah, so it really comes down to like the style of your business. And actually in the industry, like having like a 3-to-1 ratio for marketing efficiency is actually quite healthy, it's quite normal. But this again, companies in the growth stage. It's not for every type of business, every type of industry. You know, you have to know your own. And I'm pretty sure B2B will have an even larger marketing efficiency ratio because your cost will be a lot lower.
Makes sense. We're out of time. Anything else you'd like to add?
What I'd like to add is I think that one of the most important things when it comes to marketing, right? So we're talking about marketing, and a lot of people ask me this question. They're like, okay, so we want to get started in marketing. I really want to scale my business. I really want to get started. What do I need to learn? I need to go to like all these conferences. I need to read all these books. And it is true in a sense, but I feel like with what we're doing right now is all marketers are copying all marketers. So everyone will do something and we'll look at it, we'll be like, be inspired, and we'll try to implement it in our brand and we'll pray it works. And usually it does. But what marketers or brands or CEOs need to focus on is learning the psychology of a customer because these trends and strategies, they kind of go in and out because like technology takes over. But when you understand the psychology of a customer, you can solve any problem, retention, acquisition, the creatives, like all of it. Like it applies to all of it. So you understand how they buy, why they buy, like what triggers them to buy, you know, what are they looking for? You know, what triggers them to feel like they're missing out on an offer? Like all of those triggers, if you understand them on a much deeper level and you apply them in your marketing strategy, you can like skyrocket your conversions. But I think marketers fail to learn that part. They just go into like learning the tips and tricks and hacks. But that's not sustainable.
Yeah. You're right.
Yeah.
What I always think difficult is segmentation. Like, and I see that most brands don't do it. Like, look at Emirates Airlines, for example, or look at Red Bull. I just made a video and I mentioned both of them. That's why I'm remembering them now. But look at you, like look at Mind Valley. Like you have probably so many different types of people that buy your products, right? Different personas. And you don't communicate to all of them. You don't communicate differently to all of them because it's so difficult. And I find this is the most difficult. And if you are able to get this right as a marketer or as a business,
Yeah.
like talking to all your personas or to at least most of your personas, if you can group them, that'd be amazing. But we
So I think
don't.
we're getting
Yeah,
there
go ahead.
though. So right now it's really hard to do it, but we're getting there. Because AI is now enabling brands to do that. Because you can like literally plug a tool. I've spoken to so many tools. You can plug a tool into your onto your product, and literally it will segment for you and tell you these are the highest LTV customers, these are who are going to churn, and automatically trigger notifications and messages and customized emails. All of this can be done with AI. So I think we're getting there. It's just going to take maybe a year or more for it to get dialed in and get it, and for it to be a bit more cost effective from what it is right now. But it's getting there. I was having a chat with Domino's Pizza that's really interesting because we're talking about personalization. It was a conference of personalization. And they were talking about how they send these like offer coupon emails to all their customers. And then they were like, how do I customize and personalize that? So to me, it's as simple as probably the most ordered pizzas are going to be one vegetarian. They're going to be one pepperoni, and it's going to be one some chicken, some people for people who don't eat beef or don't like beef. So it's probably going to be like your top three, and you probably have that data already of like what are your top three. And then if you segment into three of saying this person always orders vegetarian, let me segment them to vegetarian. This person always orders chicken, let me segment this all these chicken eaters into one bucket. And like these people always order beef, let me segment all this. Even that can have a huge conversion rate because you're actually not alienating the, you know, sending, imagine sending a vegetarian person a pepperoni pizza in the email and showing them a picture of a pepperoni pizza saying, order now, here's a 20% off. Even just doing like manual segmentation can work so well. And it doesn't have to be crazy. You don't have to have like 100 variations. You can just have three variations, and it can already like increase your conversion rates. So I think you're right. Brands need to do it, and they can already start just know like on a much broader level, knowing like, okay, what kind of audiences do I have? Maybe male and females, for example. Fitness brands can segment male and female separately because they have different fitness challenges and they have different body types, different fitness goals. It's so different that you can't fasting for men and women are so different, you know. So you can already start segmenting that. And you just do it for like two or three segments. You don't have to go crazy. And I think that alone can like boost conversions a lot until the whole AI takes over and can do it for you on autopilot to like millions of people.
Makes sense.
Awesome.
You're
We're on our
right. Good to see you again. Thanks for taking the time. Go in peace, my friend. See you next time.
Bye.
Later.